Blog Talk Radio.
Take a Run Productions.
And welcome to Unknown Paranormal Radio. I'm your host, Kevin, of Unknown Paranormal. And I have no one else helping me tonight. Yeah, I'm kind of upset about that. Jeff, unfortunately, I knew he wasn't going to be here. Martin, I have no clue where he is at. I hope everything is okay. But at the same time, it sucks because I have to talk to myself until my guest comes in the call, so you get to hear me ramble for a little bit, I guess. Let's see. We have the Parunity conference in Wachahatchee, Texas, March 23rd at the Wachahatchee Convention Center. You can type in Parunity or Texas Parunity 2013 on Eventbrite and get all the information for booking for tickets and booths and whatever. Sorry, I had to take a little drink there. Be a good time. Unknown Paranormal will be there. Along with Fort Worth Paranormal, we're going to be doing the live investigations that evening. Our very own Mike McCaskill will be speaking along with Anthony Cepeda. It'll be a scientific/spirituality kind of debate, friendly debate, of course. Also, there'll be a lot of other guests there, like the Black, George Lopez, and this is all being put on by Becca Sugard, and she's part of Fort Worth Paranormal and a great friend of ours. ArgosCon, which there's no information up yet for the Eventbrite page, but October 4th, 5th, and 6th, East Texas GhostCon 2013 in Marshall, Texas at the Visual Arts Center there in downtown Marshall. We have Aaron Houdini that's going to put on a magic show and speak. Fort Worth Paranormal's own Justin Eric and Kevin Bryan. Jennifer Broussard of LA Spirits, Larry Flaxman of Our Past, Jeremy Jones and Richard Contreras of Paranologies and Texas Paranormal Investigations, and Anthony Cepeda is also going to speak. So we've got a good lineup of, Ken Gerhart. I can't leave out Mr. Ken Gerhart, cryptozoologist, Bigfoot hunter. Will also be speaking. So there's our lineup of guest speakers for East Texas GhostCon 2013. We're going to do some special things. Unlike other conferences, we're going to have all of our paranormal teams, they're going to put on classes for the other teams that are there. It's going to be a paranormal team class session all day so that representatives of each team that are not at their booths can go sit in on a class and get some new ideas from other teams in the field. And it's a way for us to all come away with some knowledge, which is a very good thing in this field. It's all about sharing ideas and, it's a great thing. Like I said, you're going to have to bear with me because normally I have other co-hosts here that I can talk back and forth with, so me talking to myself is kind of different for me, and hopefully this won't become a habit. I love doing radio, but I also love having a co-host. If there's anyone in the field out there that are listening right now that know us here at the radio station, if you wanted to call in and chit-chat with me and our guest tonight is Sasha Hayden, feel free to get on and discuss things with us. So we've got that going on. And so, yeah, we got that going on tonight. We're probably going to be going on an investigation. Hang on a second, y'all bear with me. I'm trying to get one of my other fellow radio show hosts to call in and help me out. They're on the MN Radio Network. Yeah, we're going to probably be going on an investigation here in a couple of weeks. Hotel Marshall, which was part of our investigations at the conference last year, and Hotel Marshall was very active. We had a lot of activity going on. A person, Kevin Ryan of Fort Worth Paranormal, got scratched right in front of me. He wasn't leaning against anything. It was in an open-air building, right? There was nothing. It's been stripped, so it's just like an open floor. And, yeah, so that happened, and we had a lot of crazy stuff happening on the ghost box and whatnot. So we're going to go back there and see Unknown Paranormal can come up with some evidence to correlate with Fort Worth Paranormal's evidence and see what we've really got going on in that building. So we're going to be doing that. Some of the other things that we're going to be doing, we're going to be going to History, Haunts, and Legends conference in Jefferson in April. We're going to be going and doing a joint investigation with Our Past and Larry Flaxman over in Arkansas, hopefully sometime in May. We're also going to do a joint investigation with Fort Worth Paranormal at the Boneyard in Arlington. And we got several locations here locally that we're going to get into. We definitely have a lot going on. So that'll be great. But anyway, one other thing that, and you just have to bear with me because I'm trying to run the board, the chat room, and I apologize for all of that. This is not typical, our typical night show. But also we have, we had a case, and I'm not going to really go into too much detail because I can't because it's residential, but we dealt with a residential case the last several days. Hopefully, fingers crossed, that we've made some progress here with the case and help these people. You know, a lot of times it's a lot of counseling involved in helping people. Hang on a second here. I have a call. Hello?
Hello?
What's up?
Hey, Kevin, what's going on, man? How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing.
So I was starting to catch part of the conversation or whatever that was that I was hearing.
The monologue, because I'm talking to myself right now.
You know what, I do that too, and some people call me crazy, some people call me ingenuitive.
Right? Yeah, thanks so much for calling in. I knew one of my co-hosts was not going to be here, but the other one, I can't get a hold of him, so I hope everything's okay with him.
Yeah. It happens. I mean, last show that we had, the first person, who is also on the network, Brittany, she got stuck at work, so that's where it turned into Dennis and I talking back and forth for about an hour.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was just, when you called in, I was talking about a residential case that we were working on here in the last few days. It's one of those things where you got to do a lot of counseling with the people and get the fear calmed down in the home. And, you know, some of the stuff that they told us, I don't know if they were over embellishing, because when we were there, we investigated Friday night, and we didn't get any EVPs, we didn't get anything, right? That doesn't necessarily mean they're telling a story. It just means that whoever was there didn't want to talk to us. So, but at the same time, how do we know that they're not over embellishing things? So, you know, it's one of those things. Hopefully, I haven't heard from them the last couple of days, so I pray that that continues.
Yeah, well, this is something and a theory that I've been having recently, too, and trying to explore best I can. With situations, well, let me ask you a couple of questions real quick. One, how many team members were in the house?
It was four of us.
All right. And also, it was only one night that you guys did the investigation?
Yeah. We did a preliminary consultation 2 days prior, walked the house, did some base readings with all the electrical and all that stuff to kind of see what's going on in the house itself. Mike, who's our psychic medium, he walked the home. He said there was something there, but it was basically ducking and dodging him. It did not want to let him, per se, read it. So that always is a concern when they're trying to hide from Mike, because they know that he can pick them off. But at the same time, the house itself, there wasn't really a heaviness to it, right? But the people there were very, very scared, and they had a lot of crazy things that they said went on.
Well, as far as what you're talking about with embellishment and everything like that, here's an idea that I've been, you know, floating around, is the reason that, like, us as investigators, when we go in, that especially to a private residence, I mean, yeah, you'll get stuff at, you know, mental institutions or, you know, like places like that, to where people are a little bit off. Well, and just in general, if spirits or entities are still at a location, I mean, they're people like you and I. If if you had a bunch of strangers walking around your house, and you know that you couldn't be seen, how apt would you actually be to walk up and talk to them?
Right.
So if you look at it that way, there's going to be a lot of cases that you, like a one night thing, to where, yeah, you may have gone in, you know, a day or two, you know, and done some stuff environmentally just
yeah.
to see what you're working with. But when it comes down to actual communication, how apt would you be just to walk up to and talk to a complete stranger? I mean, walk down the street, just try and strike up a conversation with somebody. They're probably going to back off a little bit.
Yeah.
Which I think, honestly, if that's the case, there's a possibility that, hey, on a conscious, you know, spirit that we can't see, they choose whether to talk to you or not.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So,
and that's what Mike was saying, was he could feel an energy there, right? But as soon as he walked in the door, it left. It went outside. And it was popping in and out, but, you know, it was trying to not communicate with him at all or us. So, you know, in those kind of cases, it's really hard to, you know, tell a client, hey, there's something here or whatnot, because unless we get evidence to back up what Mike's saying, we're not going to just tell a client, hey, our psychic says, you know, because we want to actually show them actual hard evidence. So then you have to kind of turn your direction towards the client themselves and put them in the state of mind that they control their home, they control what's there, and work on their spirituality a little bit and try to calm them down. And that's what we did. That's what I said. She was calling me just about every day, and now it's Sunday, and I haven't heard from her since we left her home Friday night. So I'm hoping that's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely sounds like it's, obviously better. Or if you empowered the homeowner by any means, that's for sure a benefit. It doesn't matter if the activity is still going on, but if they have the idea and the knowledge to defend themselves in certain mm-hmm. ways, then obviously there's progression that's being made, which is great for a personal case.
Yeah, exactly. And we went as far. We told them, that we would come back and cleanse the house. Before we left, we just to kind of give them a better mindset in their mind, not saying that this necessarily did anything, but we actually took holy water and sprinkled it all around the house and told them that we were doing that before we left. More of a psychological strengthening than, it actually doing something.
Yeah. And it's funny, actually, last show on Wednesday, Dennis and I were talking about it. Because the previous show, we attempted the on-air investigation for Dennis to share his evidence and everything he was getting from a location that I know as well as he does it all the time is actually active. We share, but, I'll send him evidence, he'll send me evidence, and, we compare and kind of pick each other's brains on certain things. But when he was at this location, he was doing the investigation. Well, he's also done a lot of rehab work on the building. I can't say the name of the location just because the owners want it that way. But the whole team was in there. And they were doing EVP, they were doing EMF sweeps, they were doing, trigger object, they're going through the whole gamut during an investigation. Well, that was the first time that the rest of the team members had been there, but Dennis had been there numerous times prior and has worked there a lot. Well, not a single person was able to generate any evidence if Dennis wasn't in the room.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Which was, and it hates him.
Ah.
I mean, like, it hates him to the point that, and I'll have to email it to you. I wish I could share it, but being, what it is, I can share it with you privately, but not publicly.
Yeah.
The first EVP that he got, or not the first one, but the last time he was there and he was doing EVP session, he got an EVP saying, "I'm going to choke that effer."
Well,
then this past time, exact same voice. I did the spectrograph on three different audio programs that I use when I'm going through EVP. On the spectrograph, the influx in the voice lines up exactly with the previous one when I did the overlay. And the one that he got recently was effer want to fight. Same location. Same everything, same voice. It was, I looked at it and I was kind of like, whoa. So I picked up the phone. I called Dennis right away. I said, I don't know if you did this or not, because we both use the same audio programs. When we were going, I'm like, overlap them and see what you get and call me back. And he called me back and he goes, I'm not going there alone again.
That's funny. It's interesting. We did a
live broadcast on our we did a special broadcast. That's why I kind of leave Saturday nights open on the network, so that anybody that's got a show through the week, if they got a Saturday investigation and they want to do a broadcast from wherever they're at, they can. And we did one on a Saturday from Old South Pittsburgh Hospital in Tennessee, and man, we were getting crazy activity going on while we were on the air. It was kind of hard in one sense to run a radio show because we had so much stuff going on around us, but it was pretty cool for everybody listening because they were listening to, you know, stuff that was going on live while we were there. So it was cool that the spirits decided they wanted to share their share what they do with the world when we went on air.
Yeah, there's, and I was actually talking to, well, in the northern world up in the ice tundra right now that seems to be going on. I was talking with Ursula Bielski, who, she's been on Paranormal Challenge, she's been on My Ghost Story, she's a, you know, but amazing, amazing woman.
Uh-huh.
And she has a place that I actually did, which was on air, live FM radio in Chicago, which has never been done before. And it was right around, it was a couple days before Halloween, but syndicated, obviously. It wasn't a live broadcast. We didn't have the trucks and everything there.
Yeah.
But the place is called The Great Escape, which is right by O'Hare Airport, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And we went there. It was myself, Finnegan, who hosts the night show on WTMX in Chicago, and a lot of his production crew and friends. Well, this is something I haven't posted because my camera does not cooperate, and I really, really wish that I can figure this out because it's amazing. I'm sitting there. I'm sitting in a chair. There's a laser grid. I have four of them running that are covering the whole room. And there's two windows behind me. And I'm the only person in that area. I'm probably, I'd say, maybe 3 feet away from where the two windows are.
Yeah.
And full shadow figure comes behind me and then is gone. I mean, face, arms, legs, body, everything you can see. And it's such a fast, quick clip. Or movement, I should say, not clip, but it's over the span of like 4 or 5 seconds. So you can actually focus on it and say that there is no doubt there is something behind him. But we were talking about today, and between Mark and Ursula and a couple other people in the area, that if I need help on an investigation, this place I want to hit, like, floor to ceiling, basement to third floor,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to do it. And I was actually thinking of trying and calling you and talking to you about trying to set up something live.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's why I got Friday. Friday I'm trying to get a show, but that hasn't panned out yet. But Saturdays, you know, you can, any time on a Saturday that you're, is it going to be on a weekend that you're going to do it?
Yeah, it'd be either Saturday night or I was talking to Ursula about it, or Sunday, depending. I got to talk to Brian, the owner of the place. But,
mm-hmm.
yeah, we're definitely going to hit it again.
Oh, yeah.
And hopefully now, and this is exactly what I was talking about before, like, hopefully now that I've done it once, and
mm-hmm.
they know who I am, we've talked about it for a long time, and one of them, or quotes, you know, fingers going right now, the entities that are there, if in fact that, you know, I've introduced myself, I'm back, they know who I am, maybe they'll talk a little bit more.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's what we're actually going in a couple weeks. We're going to a town. It's about 25 minutes where I had my conference last year. And one of the buildings that we had for the conference investigation was this 8-story old hotel. And I was with Fort Worth Paranormal and a couple of my members, and we stayed up all night, which that kind of sucks, staying up all night right the night before a conference that you're running. So I was beat in the conference, but we were having some crazy activity, and I watched scratches appear on Kevin's back, and he's – now, keep in mind, they gutted the hotel – you know, so when you go up to each floor, it's completely open. All that's left is the outer wall there where the windows are. And we were standing in the middle of this room, but we didn't have a camera with us. And I've done that a lot where I won't take a camera just to see if you get more activity when you're not filming, right? Not necessarily because, you know, yeah, sure, you're not documenting it, but there's sometimes like on, you know, a fun investigation like that where I want to try that because I often wonder with spirits if they can sense or see those IR lights and they actually duck and dodge around it, right? I've always had an idea that that could be the possibility. I mean, what if they knew about those lights and they just kind of ducked and dodged? Because it's real hard a lot of times for us as investigators to get video evidence. You know, it's very rare that we can get something really, really on the spot on a video camera. We'll get audio a lot, but it was right after Justin, his teammate, he said, I had told them that Mike had walked the building prior to the conference and he did a complete read of the place. So, I gave them some information so that they could use it on their EVP session. And we were on the 6th floor, and that's where Mike picked up that a woman was brutally raped on that floor. And so Justin said, do you want the woman that's here, do you want justice for the guy that did this to you? And right after he said it, he started getting pressure in his head. And he's like, man, my head. And right after he said that, Kevin went, ah, and he slumped over, and he said, damn it, my back. And I raised up his shirt, and there were scratches on the back of his shirt. So we definitely got a reaction from the question we asked. So that was pretty cool. And we're going back there to investigate it again and correlate and do a full-blown investigation. Just like you said, we're going to go, you know, all out, hit that whole building just thoroughly because, like I said, we did an investigation, but it was during a conference. So you don't really, you know, you got public people there, you know, and you got all this other crazy stuff going on. So it's hard to really concentrate as an investigator. So my team's going to go in there and do a thorough investigation and see if we can correlate some of the stuff that Fort Worth Paranormal got, EVPs and whatnot that they collected, and see what's going on there. This will only be the second time the building's ever been investigated.
Well, and if you got both times, then hell, that's a notch on the bedpost.
Yeah, exactly. I'm in real good relationship with that town because I don't have a paranormal team in anywhere around there, right? And they have a very they have probably 198 historical homes and buildings in that town. A lot of history. 5 presidents have stayed at one of the other hotels. It's right near the tracks. Theodore Roosevelt and Taft, Hoover and Truman, I believe, or something. Some of those. I'm probably not right on some of those. But anyway, and so we got a good relationship with them, and we have been getting in a lot of these buildings that have never had an investigation in them. And to me, as an investigator, those are the buildings you really want to get because it's untapped territory.
Well, yeah, there's no bias when you read reviews on, you know, so-and-so team went there and this is what they got or that's what they got. I mean, you're the one paving that ground.
Yeah.
I love that for sure. The one thing that I hope and I the only thing I ask of anybody who's out there, because all of us are doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Just and not directed towards you, just in general in the field.
Yeah.
Is if you get that opportunity to actually go into somewhere new, just be genuine. If you don't get anything,
yeah.
You don't get anything. Don't fake it. I saw that happen recently.
Yeah.
And it's just it doesn't help anybody. It just hurts everyone. So.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's one of those things where, and we're one of those teams that if we get something, you know, we're going to share it with all of our friends in the paranormal community, and if they say, hey, what's the information? I want to take my team there. I'll be gladly tell them. I'm not going to be one of these. Oh, no, that's our territory. You know how some of these teams are out there that do that kind of thing. And
yeah.
To me, I'd rather see more teams go into places or go into some places that other teams have been in and correlate stuff with them. That's the only way you're going to understand and get further in the field of research is sharing evidence back and forth and working together. And I definitely know what you're talking about when you're talking about faking evidence and all that. That's a black eye on the whole field.
Yeah. There's, you know, in the scientific community, and I'll use this analogy, in the research of the fight to cure cancer, there's not mm-hmm. scientists who are holding back, you know, ideas or thoughts or evidence. Like, everybody works together to cure cancer.
Yeah, okay,
there's patents and blah, blah, and stuff like that, and that's fine. I mean, you know, throw your little, you know, throw ownership on it. That's not a big deal, but to keep it and, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. So everybody's after the same goal. Everybody's after the same thing. I don't get why people do get stingy and like, oh, no, that's my honey hole. Or
yeah.
that's my place. You can't go there. No, that's mine. Like, there's no ownership.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm in talks with another small community about 30 minutes from my house that they have an old hospital that was built in, I believe, the 1930s or 40s. And they closed it down because they built a new facility across town. And we went and investigated it back in November. And we had a lot of stuff happening, objects being thrown and whatnot. And I started talking to the woman that let us in there. And she got me in contact with the city manager. And a couple weeks ago, I sat in on a meeting with the mayor, the county judge, the city manager, and the city secretary, and a couple of my members, and we discussed possibly purchasing the building, because right now they're discussing either somebody take over this old hospital or demolishing it, right? And for me, to help the paranormal community as a whole, I want to get a hold of a facility that has evidence or has, you know, things going on that are weird, and open it up to the paranormal field and say, hey, come in here and see what you guys get. You know, it's one of those things. And I definitely don't want to be someplace that's going to advertise or over embellish what's going on there. You know, it's what you see is what you get when you come there. You know?
Yeah. Well, to have that sort of, like, turn on, this is going to sound really bad, but you know what, I hope everybody knows what I mean by this, like the paranormal amusement park.
Yeah.
And not saying that you're going to be setting up things to you know, broadcast voices like a, you know, like a,
no.
Like a entertainment haunted house. But
oh yeah,
to have a facility to where if, you know, local groups or even groups throughout the country that, hey, you know what, there's not much going on that we have, you know, for the next like week or two or something like that. Let's go down and check this place out.
Yeah.
Let's try and help and see and then work with everybody and compare. That's phenomenal. I mean, I love that idea. I wish I had the capital to do that.
Yeah.
Because I'd do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, well, the cool thing about it is they're really wanting to get rid of the building. So they're going to get rid of it at a very, very, very low price. I mean, almost next to nothing. They want to get it off of their things that they got to pay. The most that we would have to worry about, or I would if I was owning the building, would be property tax and utilities and whatnot. But if you work, and because that's what we're in right now, we're in the number crunching exchange back and forth talks right now. And I told them, I said, I wanted to open it up as a paranormal research center where it's all controlled, you know, you're locked in, and try to, as a paranormal investigator myself, try to make it as controlled as possible for the teens to do their research. And, I mean, it's a 65,000-square-foot building. It's two stories, you know, and it's only been closed for about 4 years, so it's not falling apart at all. It's a very strong concrete building. So, and to have something, that kind of a facility for teams to come in and, you know, try to start a database where teams send in what they get after their investigation and just kind of keep a file of what's going on there. Because I definitely know something's going on there because there was too many things that we tried to debunk and tried to disprove that there was no explanation for some of the stuff that happened to us that night.
Well, that's, you know, I do have one question, though. Do you want, is there anywhere, well, we should talk in screening so I can actually have you take my credit card deposit for me to get in there to be the first one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I see it as a gold mine, per se, for another research center that is run by someone actually in the field. Because a lot of the, and I'm not knocking any of the locations out there, but it's a little bit more validity in it when your owner actually has an active paranormal team and they cater to those paranormal teams that are coming into that building, right? They know exactly what those teams need in order to function. And
yeah.
I want to do it as much as I can so that these teams can legitimately run experiments and do what they do and see what they come out of that place with. And because, like I said, around here in Texas, we're in East Texas, they're in a facility like that. And this town is completely, I'm not going to say completely because, you know, you're going to have your members of the community that's not going to like that kind of an idea until they find out what kind of money, revenue is going to be coming into that town for lodging, food, and gas. And I talked to a lot of my friends in the Dallas-Fort Worth area to see there's not even a facility that's so-called scientific controlled environment that's that big in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So a lot of teams from around here in Texas, Arkansas, and Louisiana, they'll drive a couple hours to come to this building. I mean, us ourselves, the hospital-wise, we had to drive 7.5 hours to South Texas to Yorktown to investigate that type of a hospital. So I think it would be a great thing for the community, and that's, I'm always looking for ways to help the paranormal field as a whole and help everybody else that's in the field. That's just my personality. I'd rather help people and share and tell people my theories on things, and they tell me theirs, and just always come out with knowledge. You know, that's just how we roll with our group.
Yeah, and we're the exact same way. Like my background and my history. Like I went to school. I have a degree in psychology. I worked as a paramedic, EMT for a long time. So helping people is always comes number one.
Mm-hmm.
And within the paranormal community, it's so disheartening, especially in the Chicago area. Everybody knows, you know, all the Chicago history with the gangsters and all the, you know, all that stuff that happened. Well,
yeah.
Chicago wants to sweep it under the rug and forget about it. Like the site of the Valentine's Day Massacre, it got torn down. It turned into a park. The park closed, and it boarded off, and nobody's allowed in that area. And not because there's anything wrong with that area, because it's tied to that event.
Wow. Hmm.
So it's like, you know, and it seriously is like pulling teeth. I mean, even the Field Museum downtown. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. It's a museum, so there's a lot of artifacts, but there's a lot of history from when Chicago was the White City. Coming from the book Devil in the White City, you know, it's one of those things that it's so sad to say that we can't get into these places that, and I'm a Houston boy. I grew up in Texas.
Yeah.
I have that Southern mentality of just, yeah, you want to come in as long as you're not going to rob me or, you know, hurt me in any way, that, you know what, I'll cook you dinner, I'll do whatever. Like, that's the way I roll.
Yeah.
So, here, everybody, it's a middle finger to pretty much anybody unless you're friends with them. But
mm-hmm.
It is what it is, just trying to, you know, myself and Ursula and Carl and, you know, everybody else who, Dan Ladwig and everybody else who's involved with, like, our little group up here. I mean, we're trying to change that persona.
Oh yeah. Yeah, we're in talks right now with the owners of the Baker Hotel over in Mineral Wells. That place, oh my God, it's so big. It's like 14 stories, and it was on Ghost Adventures this season. It's been about a month since that episode aired, but
yeah.
I talked to Jay Wisely, the sound guy that's on the show, and I asked him. I said, "Man, how active is that place? Every paranormal team up here in the northern and eastern part of Texas we've just always been eyeballing that place, you know, because it just looks like it's got activity. You know, it's so big." And he said, "Man, that place. It was Aaron and Nick and Zach. They were highly impressed with, you know, the results that they got in that investigation there." And we're talking to the owners. They were going to spend millions of dollars and remodel the building and turn it into like a boutique hotel or whatnot. But that all fell through. And the owners in the last month that we've talked to them, they're now thinking of opening it up for paranormal teams to come in and investigate, which I think that'll be really cool for the community too, because it'll be a very, you could have two or three teams investigate that place and they still wouldn't run into each other.
Yeah.
So
did you ever, you may have heard of it. I don't know if you've seen or not that movie Munger Road that came out a couple of years ago.
I've heard of it. I haven't actually seen it.
All right. Well, Munger Road was shot in St. Charles, Illinois. And I'm tying in your Baker Hotel with Hotel Baker here.
Mm-hmm.
So, It must be some with the name. But
I want to say the guy that built Baker Hotel had several hotels throughout the United States. So that building may have had the same owner or builder. I don't know, but I know he had several ones, and some of them had the name Baker in them. So
yeah, that's, you know what, I got to look that up then.
Yeah,
because the Hotel Baker that's in St. Charles, Illinois, is where, and the legend and everything is where the whole premise of the movie Munger Road came from.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, St. Charles, if I hopped in the car right now, I can be there probably in about 25 minutes if it wasn't ice storming right now, like just normal driving conditions. So it's not that far. And actually, the guy I started CPR with, Mark, him and I, once a year, we'll go and look up an urban legend and research it, I mean, top to bottom, front to back, not just go out there and be like, oh, well, this is BS because nothing happened. So, but we'll actually, you know, put to rest or lend credibility to urban legends. Well, Munger Road was one of those false things. But anyway, when you watch the movie, St. Charles, downtown St. Charles is featured a lot. And Hotel Baker is right on the Fox River. Like, the water rushes past the foundation, like, right on the river. And there's been just a ton of activity reports out of that place, but they never let anybody in.
Wow.
And I talked to the general manager after the movie came out. I'm like, oh, well, okay, movie came out. It's been featured in a lot of scenes in the movie. Maybe they'd be a little more apt to, you know, actually let somebody in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the meeting started with, I'd walk in, I'm speaking with the person at the desk, and then the manager comes out, and I put my card across the table, and I don't say anything.
Uh-huh.
And he turns around, he looks at me, he goes, not another one of you crazy-ass people.
Oh, damn.
I'm like, you know, sir, I want to say respectfully, I'm sure because the movie came out that you've been having, you know, XYZ, you know, people coming in here, you know, 10, 20, 30 people or whatever. And he goes, actually, you're probably right around, like, number 110. And I'm like, well, I definitely understand that. I said, I wanted to pass along information, wanted to say that I actually have done, because I did a lot of maintenance work in the hotel when I was doing construction and stuff with a repair company, not like building houses, but I worked for a service company, and I did a lot of rehab in that place. So
mm-hmm.
after going through that, and I turned around and I walked out. And I said, I'm like, you know what, I thank you for your time, just want to pass along the information, and just wanted to say, you know, thank you for actually taking the moment to meet with me, because I know that when she walked back there, she said that there's a paranormal investigator that's out there in front that wants to talk to you. And yes, Brad, yeah, another one. So, but I actually did get the call. I got a call back saying professionalism, blah, blah, this and that. I can't say that it's going to be any time, and I've been talking with him a couple times, and this was probably 8 months ago. We're trying to figure out a time. The last call I got was saying we're trying to figure out a time to have the place clear,
mm-hmm.
where you guys can do, you know, your basement to roof investigation. So That's clearing out a whole hotel.
Yeah.
I don't know how that's going to work or if it's ever going to happen, but it's just, it's cool to have the possibly the opportunity, I should say.
Oh, yeah. And my team's going, we're going to Arkansas to an old sanatorium. We went last year with Larry Flaxman and his team, our past. They go there quite a bit, and it's not a building that every paranormal investigating team can get into because it's owned by the state of Arkansas. It's actually located on an active mental hospital facility that's got buildings all around on the campus. So there's a lot of red tape. But Larry was gracious enough to invite us back again this year. And that place, it's got the I have a team member on my team that's been to Waverly Hills three times. And he, as soon as we walked in that first time, and, you know, you walk in the building, you know it's haunted. You just feel the energy in there. And he's like, man, this feels like Waverly. And I'll tell you what, that place was very active. It's 10 stories. It's a huge building, and we had a lot of activity happening, and of course our friends in our past, they go there quite a bit and do events there and whatnot, and they told us after we left the building, you know, that was the most activity they've ever experienced in there. I mean, we were down in the basement, and there's a lot of old crap down there. They store a bunch of the old beds and stuff from the different rooms. And we were down there, and we ventured back towards the back of the basement, and we started getting little pebbles thrown at us. I mean, you could see, you know, you could hear them hitting different things, and we thought something was falling from the ceiling, but it wasn't. And it was weird because every time we turned our lights off, our flashlights off, you'd hear these pebbles thrown. You turn your lights on, they'd stop. And at one point, we turn our lights on, the string that's hanging down from the light bulb in that room, it was spinning like a helicopter when we turned the lights on. We're like, what the hell is going on down here, you know? And what was real weird was at that time, I had just gotten the Ovilus X, and I was just kind of playing around with it, you know? And I had it on, and it after all those rocks were thrown, the ovulist said, Dee Dee, which is one of my investigators, and because we had all the guys down in the basement, and we stuck all the girls up on the second or third floor, because being a sanatorium that was a tuberculosis center, you know, there was all female nurses back in those days, and, you know, some of these patients may have been mistreated. I don't know, you know, the whole history of the building, but the Ivo said Dee Dee, and then right after it said that, the walkie went off, and you hear girls screaming in the background and said, hey, we just had some activity. So we left the basement and met them on the first floor, and sure enough, Dee Dee, she was holding the camera, and they were in one end of the sanatorium up there on the third floor, and she got grabbed. She had a whole handprint just red on her arm, and she wasn't next to any of the girls when it happened, right? And so that kind of freaked her out. We were just like, that's some crazy shit right there. So I would have said her name, which I know it's not. I check later. It's not in the word bank that's put in the ovulus itself. And then right after it said her name, the shit happened, and it was actually her that got grabbed.
That's pretty crazy. You know, the one thing, and I was messing around. So I went on the App Store on my phone. Not Apple. I don't have an iPhone, but I have an Android. So I went on the Play Store on the Android market, and I downloaded kind of an Ovilus program. I'm like, well, okay, so it's sending, it's receiving transmission, it's, you know, looking through, I'm like, and I didn't have any high hopes at all for anything whatsoever. So I downloaded this app, and I think, and let me bring it up, I think it's called Spirit Speaker, if I remember right. Ghost Speaker is what it's called. So I downloaded this app, and it basically works like a novelist.
Yeah.
So every once in a while, there'll be a word that'll pop through. Funny thing about it, if you move the phone or shake it or anything, it will spit out a whole sentence or conversation as long as you're shaking the phone. So, yeah, I downloaded it, and it was like, I think the one, the funniest one was room in background will shutter prostitutes. I'm like, oh, great. Like, my app has a dirty mind.
Oh man, yeah, it's crazy. Some of the like Friday was the first time I had just gotten for Christmas. I bought myself as a gift. Well, of course, being a paranormal investigator, you know, you find an opportunity or an excuse. You're like, I'm going to buy myself a new piece of equipment. So I was like, well, I'll just buy me a piece of equipment for Christmas. So I got a new SB7 from Chris Fleming, and he modified the AM band, detuned it out, and also detuned out the white noise. So when you turn it on and put it on AM and start scanning, you hear nothing. It's just you hear the clicking of the SB7 scanning the channel. But you still can get stuff come through. And I had never field tested it, and we did it Friday. And we were actually having a conversation with a supposed spirit, you know, coming through the box. But we could actually hear him a lot clearer because of all the filter that Chris had put on that AM instead of it just scanning, you know, straight through radio stations and having to try to decipher whether or not it's an actual radio station or somebody talking. So that was really cool. I'm going to have to do some more field testing with it. But I was pleased with that new piece of equipment that I got.
See, I have two of the SB7s. The one I modified and I pulled all the, basically the second that I got it, I bought two at once, but the second that I got them, I ripped apart one of them and pulled all the antenna wiring off and modified it to where it's still, it's basically a short range antenna within a 3.5 foot radius is what I've noticed with my RF stuff of picking up of a device. Well, the one I left normal and the one I modified, and going through them and actually playing both of them with amplification, there's one that'll pick up something and then the other one that won't pick it up and vice versa.
Huh.
It's weird. It's a hit or miss thing. I mean, it'll be the same voice coming through each one when they're not even 6 inches apart, but
wow.
It'll be one at a time, but
yeah.
It's the same voice. And your sweep rates and all that stuff matter too. I mean, if you're running a low sweep rate, then yeah, you're going to hear words as opposed to blips.
Yeah. And that kind of goes on the same basis of we've actually, you know, tried using two K2 meters, set them on a table side by side, and ask the spirit to set a certain one off, and they'll do it, you know. And what's weird is they're both in so close of a radius that they're both going to be able to pick up, for the most part, they're going to be able to pick up the, you know, EMF signal. So technically, because we tested it and tried to get them spaced out just right, because we put our cell phone, you know, try to get the cell phone in the range where they're both setting up the same amount of lights at the same time, right, to try to make sure the signal's kind of equal. And for that, for whatever energy that we were talking to be able to point at a K2, a certain one, and it light up but doesn't light the other one up, it still scratches my head on some of that crap, you know, how they can do that kind of thing. Just like
well,
the SBC.
That's, and that is kind of mind-boggling because the device itself was designed to pick up environmental things.
Yeah.
So if they're close, they're on top of each other, basically trying to, and there's an ability to manipulate one and not the other. That's selective energy at that point, which is just absolutely weird.
Yeah, exactly. Because if it's in, like you said, if it's any environmental type of EMF signal, I mean, I guess if, say, you were standing, if one investigator was standing on one side or the other of the instrument, and for some reason their asses didn't leave their cell phone in the car like they're supposed to, and they got a text, maybe possibly one can set it off. But when it's doing it on cue, on command, or even we, you know, do the old trick of countdown on, you know, countdown from 3, 3, 2, 1, light it up, and it lights up, you know, to try to get the more consistent direct response. It's just mind-boggling that energy can select, you know, an instrument, because if it's environmental, both of them will pick it up.
Yeah, that's, I mean, the variation is the human element.
Mm-hmm.
And the actual science of it, the device is a device. It's designed to do one thing.
Yeah.
So if you get a fluctuation, and I mean, if a K2 meter, and I don't know if you've ever actually tested the range of a K2 meter, then it's actually pretty far. It's it'll pick up something. It'll start picking up about 12 feet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you have them even, you know, 2, 3 feet apart, they should still be gathering the same information, maybe not the same intensity.
Right.
But it still should be picking up the same information.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So that's really, really interesting. The one thing that I've been doing too recently is any investigation that I've been on, you know, the flashlight test.
Yeah.
So turn on the flashlight, turn off the flashlight, blah, blah. Well, I don't agree with that in any way, actually.
Yeah.
There's definitely a minor possibility that it could be true, but there's so many different variables that go into what could possibly be happening. Especially if you're turning it off to a point that the light doesn't go on, but light tap will turn on. So as soon as you set that flashlight down, that back or the front or whatever flashlight you're using is going to rotate a little bit. And I'm talking like millimeters and micromillimeters. It will rotate. There's also different barometric pressures that can, you know, arc between the battery and the contact and turn it on. So that's, I can talk about this for days, actually.
Because while we got this moment, our guest, Sasha Hayden out of Alaska, her husband just Facebooked me because I was wondering why she hadn't called in. And Sasha had to be taken to the hospital. She has a heart issue and had a bad episode today. And he said it's nothing serious. She actually, after she got feeling better, she actually told her husband to contact us to make sure that we knew what was going on. So that we'll just reschedule Sasha for another time. Sasha's got an organization that's it's a paranormal community against bullying. And it's not only about bullying in the paranormal field, but it's about bullying in schools as well. So we will get her back on the show when she's feeling more like herself. So I just wanted to make that announcement. So it's just me and Matt for the remainder of the show. So we'll just keep babbling.
You know what? I talk like a 16-year-old girl with a new cell phone who just got a new car and wants to call her friends and pick them up. So I got no problem with that. But, Sasha, I definitely hope you're feeling better. You know, hearts out to you. I wish, or I don't know exactly what the situation is, but I hope that you're okay and you pull through and hopefully get to listen to you and even talk to you in the future.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's what I told her husband, that our prayers are with her. I mean, she took an ambulance ride, so it was pretty serious, but they got it under control, and we'll have her back on at some point. I've never gotten to actually talk to any paranormal investigators that live in Alaska, so that in itself is interesting, you know? Because it's so barren out there. So we'll definitely have Sasha on the show at another time. And right now we just want her to get well.
Yes. Yes, for sure. That is the number one goal, is so we can actually speak to them living.
Exactly. Yeah.
I did the human repair stuff for years, and I still crave it. I want to get back into it. I got a motorcycle accident to where it put me out of that line of work, but it's every single day, man. I sit back and just I see a bus go by, bus being ambulance,
mm-hmm.
and just miss being on it and like miss repairing people.
Oh yeah. Definitely.
Twisted mind.
Well, it's the satisfaction of being able to be there for someone in need and help them as much as you can until you get to the hospital. So, I mean, I could see why you would miss something like that.
Yeah, it is one of those things that just there's. I'm not going to go into. To graphics or anything like that, but there are certain situations where you pull up and you hop out to do your job that you really just have to leave your heart on the curb or leave it at home, especially
yeah.
when it involves children or stuff like that. But there is a feeling of gratification, a feeling of gratification, not to yourself, but to the family that that you feel when you're able to help somebody in a situation. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, a gangbanger who just, you know, shot up whatever. I mean, yeah,
mm-hmm.
that person you're going to hurt a little bit more when you're putting the IV in.
Yeah.
That's just the reality of it.
Yeah, I know. I've had an IV run on me, so yeah.
But, you know, there's that thing that I pass it out to all my my family that does, like, family as in everybody who's in EMS or, you know, fire or police or anything like that, just have, you know, hats off. It's amazing to where you don't respect them until you need them.
Yeah.
And then that's like the person that is the most to you, whether you're the one that they're working on or you're witnessing them working on somebody you care about.
Yeah.
So True heroes, which is why we're doing another show coming up soon.
That's good.
Dedicates to that. So.
I'm really glad that you do that. They don't get enough recognition out there of what they do, you know. And it's sad to say, a lot of the times that when people in the fire and rescue and law enforcement and all that, they get kind of recognition, or you hear of heroic things that they do, is when it's more on a national level kind of catastrophe or shooting or whatnot. And, you know, these people do this day in and day out and do heroic things that a lot of times go unnoticed in as far as the public eye. So I'm glad you do that.
Yeah, well, it's also even here's what I was thinking, and this popped in my head of, like, I wish, like, that's my passion. I got to recertify and blah, blah, and do all that stuff. After I do that, I was sitting next to an ambulance, and it wasn't just at a stoplight in transit, and looked over at it, and it wasn't a local thing for the area that I was in. It was a town that was probably like 30, 40 miles away. Well, there was a gas main explosion, and they responded to it. So 30, 40 miles in the Chicago area is like a 2-hour drive.
Mm-hmm.
So they got the call, they suited up, they went, hopped in the bus, they hopped in the engine, they went to location, they did whatever they could, and they were just on the way back. So they traveled to help people that isn't even in their community whatsoever.
Yeah.
What does a normal person do on their daily commute? They'll just sit there and bitch about the driver that's in front of them or behind them, or, you know, riding their ass or driving too slow or not using turn signals or whatever. It's like,
yeah,
these people commute to help people that aren't in their community.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of heart that it takes for that, and you're right. The other thing, too, is military personnel, like military medics and stuff like that, they don't really get recognition for pulling soldiers out of battle. The mm-hmm. person who's injured in the battle, and not saying that I'm not undermining anybody by this, by the way, I just want to make that clear, but the soldier in the battle will get a Purple Heart for being injured in the line of duty, or what, you know, depending on what branch it is. But they'll get some sort of recognition for being injured in the line of duty, but the medic who serviced them is unknown.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that, you know, and like I told you before, I love all the shows that we have on the network, because everybody does something different. They have their own twist on a paranormal radio show. And it's not all necessarily about the paranormal, you know. We're all people, and there's a lot of things out there in our world that we can talk about. You know, I've had authors on that don't even write books that are in the paranormal. I had a young lady on the show several months ago that was a Playboy playmate and in a lot of horror movies. And I had her on the show. We talked a little paranormal with some of her experiences growing up, but for the most part, we were talking about, I was trying to get some intel on the Playboy Mansion.
And how to break in or what?
how to get some tickets to go in that gate.
There was and the one show that I did with a great family friend, Tom Dreesen,
mm-hmm.
and an amazing actor, Kim Estes. And he's on Cold Case Files. He's been just a bunch of different TV shows. But Kim actually does have a tie into the paranormal. But, like, when Tom Dreesen was on and talking with him, he toured the country as Frank Sinatra's opening act for 14 years.
Wow.
Like, lived at his house. And it was amazing in the kind of the behind the scenes, you know, life of him and with Frank Sinatra. I mean, how often do you get to hear that, you know?
Right. Exactly. You know, we've even put a different twist on our show. We've been having conspiracy theorists come on and talk about some of the books they've written and some of the conspiracy theories that are out there. And to me, it's kind of falls under the paranormal because it's unknown, you know. The events, we don't necessarily know all the facts, right, because of the government or whatnot. So to talk about those things, man, don't even get me started on talking them.
Yeah, there's a guy that's up in Wisconsin. He's written a bunch of books. I mean, he's an amazing person. And I'm trying to remember the name of his bar that he has up there, but it's on a lake that in Wisconsin it's like a hotbed for UFO activity.
Mm-hmm.
And Benson's Bar. It's by Dundee, Wisconsin. It's a little tiny bar. If anybody's ever up in the Wisconsin area, you got to go to Benson's. He has one of his little props that he has behind the bar is an alien in a jar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things that you look at that it's like, well, is that real? So obviously it's not a, you know, it's not a real alien. If it is, I you know what, I can't say it's not because I don't know for sure. But the looking at it and holding it in your hands, it's one of those things that just definitely makes you question, like, I think that this might be possible.
Well, yeah. I talked to Peter Robbins, who's been in the UFO field for over 30 years. He was actually, he worked on the notorious case that eventually they made a movie about, Fire in the Sky, about alien abduction of a gentleman. And he's close friends with all those guys. And so we talked about that, which I thought that was really cool, you know, because that happened in the 70s. I was just a little tot, little fart. So, yeah, and, you know, I asked him, I said, have you ever had, you know, government surveillance or somebody following you, that kind of thing? And he goes, oh, yeah. And I said, you know, that's really interesting because why would our government waste money to do surveillance on someone that's studying UFOs and alien abductions unless there's something to it, right? Why are we paying attention to that kind of thing? So, and he told me, he's like, yeah, you know, it's there's more out there than what the government even lets on. So, yeah, that was a hell of a show there.
Yeah, my uncle, he used to be in, he was in the Air Force. He was a fighter pilot and then ended up going on career to work for U.S. Air. And then, like, after being a pilot, he ended up being a security control person for Homeland Security for U.S. Air, and then went back to being a pilot because he missed it. And some of the stuff that he's seen is kind of phenomenal. But my one thing with UFOs is it's an unidentified flying object.
Yeah, it could be anything.
It doesn't mean that it's an alien. The same thing with paranormal. It doesn't mean that it's a spirit. It doesn't mean that it's a ghost. It just means that it's something that is outside of the normal and rational thought that can't be explained.
Oh, yeah. You know,
so
if I go to a third
world country and I throw a Frisbee and they've never seen a Frisbee before, it's an unknown flying object.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Well, I know growing up, my dad told me he was in the Air Force during Vietnam, and he went over to, I can't even remember the Air Force base over in California, but he come out of the barracks one night and actually saw a UFO flying disc, you know, hovering and doing different maneuvers above the barracks. And, you know, Dad was trained in, you know, being able to identify aircraft and, you know, various things that they had in the military. Not saying that that could not have been some sort of misidentification of some secret military type vehicle, but, you know, when your father's actually in the Air Force and trained on that stuff and he can't even figure out what he saw, you know, it just makes you scratch your head. But, you know, that's the thing, you know, you just don't know what, you know, our eyes can play tricks on us as well, and lighting and whatnot. So just like the paranormal, there's a lot of variables that come into it. You know, we always say, and I'm sure you say this too, when in doubt, throw it out, you know, when it comes to evidence. Because if there's one little doubt that piece of evidence that you think you have can be debunked or explained, then you need to just chunk it.
Yeah. And see, that's, you know, I see a lot of groups, and more power to them. I am not knocking anybody in any way at all. But I see a lot of groups that do post a lot of evidence, and yeah, okay. How many things have you seen on Facebook that are orb pictures, quote unquote? And you know, I used to do it like a couple of years ago, and I got away from that to where, like, posting evidence about, you know, certain things. And I'm not a big fan of, like, still photography because of the variables that go into it.
Yeah.
So I'll use it for personal validation or verification, and because, like, the way I have my camera set up, it's time-stamped. And so if I have a timestamp on a camera, which is also timestamped to a recorder, then, okay, that's a little more But I don't really post any of this stuff just because of the, I mean, people want to, like, cut it down, basically.
Yeah.
And I'll never cut anybody down because I don't know if last time you checked, but last time I checked, I don't have answers for shit.
Yeah, you know, and I've done that as well. And I even worded it when I put the picture up. I said, everybody take a look at this picture and tell me if you see anything, you know, out of the ordinary with the picture, right? I didn't say anything of, oh, this is evidence, there's a spirit in the picture, nothing of that sort. I wanted to get everybody's take on it without throwing my little idea in there, right? I just wanted to see if they could debunk it. And
yeah.
I had several people that, because the building was real dusty, so there's a lot of dust particles and a lot of different little small orbs in the picture, right? But that's not why I posted the picture. I knew that there was crap in the photograph itself. But what was interesting, and we were in a theater, and in one of the balcony seats, the way the picture was taken, at first I just thought it was an orb. Well, then I blew it up and kind of went in, and the orb, it has a head and it has shoulders, and it looks like a figure sitting in a seat, right? But at the same time, it could be two orbs stacked up on each other in the photograph. So I wanted to see if anybody else saw that or what their explanation was, but I was getting people right and left that were going, what kind of evidence is this? Why are you posting this? Blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I even wrote it, you know, read my caption. I just want your take on what is in the photograph. I'm not saying it's evidence, you know. But
yeah.
I was like, damn, I'm not going to do that anymore. I was just wanting some help analyzing the photograph. I did not want to say it was, oh, look at this, you know, a bunch of damn orbs.
Well, the one thing that has always cracked me up, and I really, really hope that people, I don't know, should I do a little spoiler for what happens mentally when you watch every single paranormal TV show that's on?
Sure.
All right. Well, spoiler being, what happens mentally when you're watching a paranormal show and they play an audio clip, and ghost hunters actually used to do this purposely, is they would play the audio clip before they would actually put the text on the screen. Well, your mind converts it to hear once the text hits of what is actually going on. All right.
Yeah.
So they persuade you to have the phonics process in your mind in a certain way to hear what is actually being said. So next time anybody's watching any of the paranormal shows, when they say, oh, we got this EVP, whether it's Ghost Adventures, Ghost Hunters, I'm sorry for you guys, but Haunted Encounters, any of those shows, when they say, oh, we caught an EVP, close your eyes and don't watch the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And see if you make it out that way. Because that's exactly the way that you and I and every other team that's out there, once you do an investigation, you're going to review, that's the process you have to go through to actually figure out what the hell is being said.
Yeah, because we as a team, I'll give out EVP sessions to every person in the group, right? And we all on our own listen to the evidence and clip out what we think might be a possible hit. Then we all get together, as many as I can. Not all of us can get together at the same time because of schedules, but I get a majority of them to come to the house, and we start classifying. And when we do it, I play the clip, and I just keep handing the headphones to different people in the group. And they listen, and they don't say what they think it says. And then after everybody's listened, then we'll say, you know, each one will say what they think it says kind of thing, right? Because we don't want to influence somebody's hearing on, oh, that's what it is. Because as soon as you tell somebody, hey, it said, kiss my ass, then everybody's like, yeah, I hear it, you know? So I definitely know what you're talking about. I've watched some of these shows, and I've even, you know, looked at the caption that it's supposedly supposed to be saying, but being in this field so long, our ears are, you know, gotten used to really listening to the EVPs and trying to make them out. And 9 times out of 10, what they're saying it's saying and what I'm hearing are two different things.
Yeah, I've experienced that too. Kind of I can't say all the time, but a lot of the time. And, you know, a lot of that comes down to when it depends what audio program they're using to snip it, to edit it, to put it into production. Like, I mean, the best way, and this is what takes a lot longer. When I'm going through audio review is I will actually have headphones that were not cheap.
Yeah.
But I will have, you know, my expensive-ass headphones that came in a nice case with leather and all that stuff. I'll plug them in, then to each individual recorder before I do anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
Have a pad of paper, and I'll write down possibilities. Well, if something comes through that's like a no-brainer, like if you're asking, you know, oh, well, how'd you die here? I was killed by Tim. Like if, you know, you get something like that, it's like, oh, well, there it is.
Yeah.
So, raw evidence, perfect. If I have to throw it into three different audio programs, which they all process stuff on a different level,
mm-hmm.
I'll do that. And then I'll take the one. I may enhance. I normally don't normalize. I will do a sound reduction.
Yeah.
But it's still pretty much raw. I can't call it raw audio, but I mean, it's still pretty much raw audio with minimal editing. I don't, like, I won't amplify anything, or I won't cancel something out except for just ambient noise.
Yeah, and we do that too. I'm just not a big fan. I'll do it if I'm doing it for a client. I'll clean it up as much as I can. If it's a Class C type EVP, well, I have to. But as for the most part, I like it to be as original as it can be, right? Now, if there is a lot of ambient noise in the background that I can do a noise reduction on and take some of that out so you can hear the voice a little bit clearer, I may do that. But unlike you, I try to stay away from manipulating and changing it and slowing it down and speeding it up and all that kind of stuff as much as possible. And if I do a lot to the recording, then I normally don't play it on a radio show. I don't post it. I only post those ones that are just in your face. You hear it and you're like, holy shit, that was awesome. You know, and those are your Class A's. But, you know, even Class B's, I try to stay away from it as much as possible, because I've even on some of these shows, they manipulate it so much it almost sounds robotic, you know, when they play it on the show. And I'm just like, if you got to do that much to it, why even play it? Unless that's the only piece of evidence you got.
Well, the other thing, too, is you got to remember, and everybody has to remember, and this is what I initially was talking about, is these, like, you watch Ghost Hunters, you watch Ghost Adventures, they're on location for 3 days.
Yeah.
You know, 3 or 4 days, and they have to condense, and the editing department cuts it down into a one-hour show, which, with commercials, okay, you cut it down to 47 minutes.
Yeah.
But you also cut it down to them setting up the show. So actual broadcast time is maybe, what, 28 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Of actual them investigating? So
that's
3 or 4 days worth of stuff that's cut down to 28 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I believe that you agree with this. This is not a glamorous hobby. not like you see on the shows to where it's just all, you know, fun and partying and you get to check out these haunted places. There is so much work and so much time that's dedicated to what we do. It's not even funny.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, hell, you got it. Doing it with Brittany and then mine. That's 6 hours just this week that I'll be on the phone talking on radio.
Yeah.
So.
Oh,
and it's not like you or I or Brittany or anybody or Dennis or anybody benefits from it at all. I mean, we do it for everybody that we talk to.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I had this discussion with some members of my team beginning of the year. They were asking how the radio show's doing. And I said, man, it's going great. And they said, well, is it beneficial? I said, dude, it's like basically going to a bar or going to a class. In a way, when it comes to the paranormal, I said, do you realize how many contacts in the field I have now, people that I have talked to that I've never even heard of before, or I heard of but never actually talked to them on a personal level? And I said, you know, all the knowledge that I've soaked in and ideas that it's triggered, I said, it just benefits our team even more. I said, I really enjoy it. It's just it's great to talk to these people and get to know them more on a personal level of what they do, right? How they got into the field, how they go about investigating, or however, you know, what they do in life, you know, just BSing on the radio show, you know, just talking about everyday stuff as well. And I love it, man.
Yeah. And as well do I. It's, and I know exactly what you're talking about. The funny thing about it is it's an outlet for people to promote, and that's hands down for sure. That's the whole reason I do it is for other people, not for me.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis doesn't do it for him. Sarah didn't do it for her. It was just it was one of those things where it's an outlet to where everybody can gather, and it benefits everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
I can't say, this is going to sound kind of bad. I want to put that out there right now. But I can't say that a lot of the guests that have been on, I would have been able to have a conversation with without a promotion outlet. And I understand
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Oh,
but,
definitely.
But I still have continuing relationships with these people afterwards.
Yeah.
And it's seen in a completely different manner, I guess. Where, let's be honest, you and I, whether you're talking on Skype and having, you know, through the computer or whatever, and I'm on my cell phone, it doesn't matter. It's still just a phone call. But it opens
oh,
up a whole different world.
Oh yeah, I'm on my cell phone too. I just have it on speakerphone. But but yeah, it's like having a big phone conversation. It's just like, you know, when we did that End of the World episode. I mean, we were just laughing and cutting up, and just had a blast doing it, and. You know, that's what it's about, you know, and that's what I try to tell when I was having a conversation with my team. They were like, well, maybe we need to do some different things on the show. And I said, well, you know, I've already been in the process of doing different things and trying different things and whatnot. And I said, I said, not to be mean to some of y'all, but y'all haven't tuned in the last year. So you really don't know what's going on. I said, but I try to pride myself in not only my show on Sunday, the show I help host on Tuesday with Jody, and you guys and everybody else that has a show on the network. I try to make the network where you guys are in complete control and everybody has a creative way of doing their show. And it's just not about the interview process, right? You know, and you can even be, because I don't know about you, but I know a lot of my guests, they love the more laid-back atmosphere when they come on the show, right? They can not have to be so serious and straight to the point. I mean, they can make comments about anything they want to talk about, you know, if they want to cuss or whatever it might be. They can just be themselves for a change, right? And I get a lot of good feedback from that. And, you know, I try to do a lot of comedy bits on our show because I think comedy is a good thing, and it kind of loosens you up before you go into talking with guests and whatnot. And a lot of the guests, they laugh their ass off when they hear some of the little bits that we come up with.
Yeah, no, and I'm the same way. That's a, you know, and see, I'm not any different when you meet me in person than I am on the show. Like, it's just it's just me.
Yeah, that's the same way that Martin and Jeff and myself are on this show. We're just us on the show, right? And we're not going to put this front on because we're on a radio show, because that's what I think makes these shows unique. Everybody gets to be themselves. I mean, my God, Justin, Eric, and Kevin, you know, they'll talk about farts on their show. Well, that's part of them. That's where they are in real life. You go investigate with them, you know? So that's just what I like about it. And, you know, there's a lot of good things coming up, and hopefully I can add another show to the network on Fridays to complete the lineup.
Yeah. I'd say I'd take you up on that.
So, but yeah, man, we're down to about 15 minutes, so we've been babbling good tonight.
Yeah, it's, I mean, in closing remarks, I should say, just no matter, damn, my throat's been bothering me. So, in, you know, and everything just paranormal, and I think that you'll agree with this, nobody has the answers. So, no matter what, you can't chastise somebody. You can't throw somebody, you know, out to the wolves because of what they post. Yeah. I don't fully agree with orbs. I think there's a possibility of them. Would I use it as evidence? No. Would I call somebody out and say that they're, you know, BS because that's what they caught? Never.
Right.
It's just, it's one of those things to where until somebody has a definitive proof, a definitive answer of this is what it is, you don't have to call somebody out or say anything negative, because we're all reaching for the same thing.
Mhm. Oh yeah, definitely. And you know, it's not just in our field, but I got a good buddy of mine, Ken Gerhardt, cryptozoologist, and even in the crypto world, they're not big fans of photographs, because you know, just the same way we are in our field. And you know, like Ken says, he gets hundreds of photographs all the time of possible Bigfoots or whatnot, and, you know, like he told me on the show, he said, man, I'm just not a big fan of photographs to begin with.
Yeah, it's a hard medium. I mean, when it was 35 milliliter back in the day, it's a lot harder to change something or modify something than it is now.
Oh, yeah. It's so much easier now with all the technology that we have for somebody to Photoshop or manipulate a photograph into, you know, to make it look like it's a ghost or whatnot. And, you know, the only photograph that I have, if anybody wants to check it out on Spirit Casper Facebook page, go under the pictures. My dad took a photograph at a conference that we were at several years ago. It's been about 3 years, and we were on a ghost walk in Jefferson, Texas, and we were outside a gentleman, Mike Mitchell Whittington, who's an author and written several books on the paranormal. He owns the Grove, and it's rated, and I can tell you, being there, it's one of the most haunted places in Texas as far as activity. And we were standing out there, there's a crowd of people, and my dad had just an old-ass Vivitar cheap digital camera, right? And what's crazy about these, you know, people spend hundreds and thousands of dollars on cameras and whatnot. And the more money you spend, it seems like the more filters and the more things that are on it that will filter out things. Well, this camera, you know, being cheap, don't have all those fancy filters. And I got video, I got EVP, and this photograph all together, right? And I got a video of a mist that was moving across the walkway, and it was changing directions. It wasn't a fog. It wasn't someone's breath, because smoke or any of that, because it was changing directions and moving like it was intelligent, right? And I know when you're cold and you blow out your breath, it's not going to zigzag like this on close to the ground. And we took this photograph, and, you know, it's a mist going across these people that are standing in front of Dad. And you look, and it's got a head, it's got the eyes, the nose. It looks like it's got some kind of bonnet or hat on it. And it's a cool picture. And it's one of the only pictures that I'll ever post on there, because, yeah, it could be something else. But to me, having an EVP, I got an EVP at the same time Dad took the photograph, and I got video leading up to the photograph. There's too much there pointing that it's got to be some kind of apparition.
Yeah, I'm actually in the process of looking it up right now.
Yeah, look at it. See, give me your take on it, because it's pretty crazy. I've shown it to several people, and they're all like, "Holy shit!" You know, and that was taken with a old cheap ass camera. You know, and it was, you know, I got all this other additional evidence that will correlate with the photograph and timestamp at the same time. So it's not like that was the only piece of evidence that was that photograph. I have video and I have audio as well. And the spirit basically was, the woman that was doing the ghost walk was talking about the moon spirit that's in the front yard. And his EVP response to her was, "You're a bitch." Yeah.
It happens.
So.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm actually in the process of looking that up right now. And sending a message.
Oh, yeah. And trying to think, yeah, after this show, I got to get on the horn and try to find, get Jody and I a guest for Tuesday. I haven't talked to her yet. She went down to this weekend. And was at that's the event that she got the Skin You Alive EVP. So I'm curious to find out if Jody got any more British dudes come through her ghost box.
Yeah, I remember that from the big show that we had.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to hear about that too.
Yeah, she just got back home a little while ago, so I'm going to holler at her after the show and find out how it went.
Well, I was just talking to the message I was sending. I was talking to Helmy from Haunted Encounters on Facebook, and I know we're running really, really short on time.
Oh, we got 10 minutes.
Oh, there he is. What's going
Hello?
On, Helmy? How are you doing?
Yeah, good. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah. Well, bum, the weekend's about to be over, but, you know, what do you do?
Hey, I'm off tomorrow, so it ain't that bad.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, exactly. I got to go back to work for 5 days.
Yeah.
Well, so do I. But my week is Tuesday through Saturday right now. So.
So you're halfway through your weekend. Mine's over.
So, hey, you know, and talking on the show tonight, Jody is, and him are looking for a guest on Tuesday. You got time?
Tuesday should be good.
Cool.
Well, there you go. Solved your problem.
Yeah, you solved that problem.
Yeah, if you want this kind of trouble, I'm available.
Oh, yeah. We're always looking for trouble.
Beautiful. Perfect fit. Write that down.
Cool.
So how's Captain doing?
He's doing real well. He's going to town on a marrow bone right now. Sunday tradition, he gets to knock one of those out of the park, so he gets real excited.
So I noticed the when Daniel posted that video of the puppy, and Simon, I think was the dog's name in the video, was helping the puppy learn how to go downstairs.
Yeah.
And you've actually done that before also?
Oh, no, I was just making a joke. And my other lab, who's she's a year older, when he was a puppy, used to be really irritated by Captain. You know, obviously his puppy's kind of nipping and all up in your face and all that. So she'd run upstairs, he'd follow her up, and she'd turn him around immediately and come back downstairs. And he was obviously too scared to go down, so he'd sit up there and yelp like he was being beat. And so probably in excess of 1,000 times, I got to haul his butt down the stairs till he got the confidence, because with dogs, they're kind of creatures of habit. So that was really cool in that video, because the other dog was showing the other dog that it was okay. And they're repetitive. That's how you train dogs. And so it was really kind of a neat little video that, you know, it's fun to watch and it's cute because it's a puppy, but it actually kind of demonstrated some things that I thought were kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree. I was watching, before I had two dogs, I kind of had the same situation where I, you know, got on all fours and was crawling up and down stairs, to where I'm so glad that nobody took video of that. And I have to say, yeah, I have done it after a long night out drinking, but
to serve another purpose. Yeah, that's the cool thing about dogs, though. That's why I almost like them more than people. They're astute students of behavior, of each other. People's dogs will say their dogs can read their mind. Basically, they'll let you know what you're doing almost before you're doing it, because we give, just like in poker and tells, little teeny things that you do that you don't recognize that you're doing, all they do is study us. And so, for example, tonight, I stood up and Captain ran immediately to the freezer where we keep the marrow bones, because apparently I do something, I have a tell that identifies that to them. And so the cool thing is they just, you know, they're talking to us all the time, and they're watching us all the time, so they can really understand things. And, you know, sometimes your dog knows it's time to play, you might have a different cadence in your step. So it's little things like that that I find so fascinating, and really tried to plug into to actually, you know, put an effective canine investigator in the paranormal field. And so it translated really well, so I'm stoked.
Heck yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely cool. And not saying that I'm a, you know, been a trainer or anything, but the one, not on your level. I mean, trained my own to fit lifestyle. But yeah, no, I completely agree with what you're saying is molding and repetitive. They're,
yep.
Like, it's still, I mean, it's such a family member and a family unit at that point, that bond that's created. And it's individual. I honestly do believe, like, your dog or cat or whatever it be, and parrots are even more receptive, but they feed off of you.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. There's the short list of sentient creatures that have the theory of thought, and, you know, there's a lot of debate going on as to whether or not they have feelings, which obviously, you know, it's side I resigned myself to, but, you know, some really cool stuff, and you're dead on. It's understanding the individual dynamic between you and your friend, and, you know, in utilizing that. The hardest thing is not to train the dog, it's to train yourself.
Yeah.
To understand. Yeah. That's the tough part, and that's a lot of people kind of misconstrue that, because you can teach a dog to do some, I mean, I deal with a lot of people that do a lot of different things in the dog training community, and, you know, especially service dogs, because there's a lot of things that tie into what we do. Teaching dogs to identify certain things that they wouldn't necessarily, you know, like Captain. Dogs smell the ozone, magnetic radiation put off, the chemicals put off by electricity. They smell it all the time. For me to, you know, teach him, hey, when you smell this, and I've asked you, and I've given you, you know, you're going and looking for this, when you smell this, you let me know. And, you know, that wasn't that hard. It, you know, it took a lot of work, but to, you know, identify the game to him, and then he just became more and more proficient and enjoys it and thrives on it. But the whole thing was, you know, the beauty in the whole thing is dogs are unspoiled. They don't watch paranormal activity. They don't listen to ghost stories. They go in and they react organically to their situations. So for me to understand, you know, and identify his behavior, because sometimes he's just being a dog in an unfamiliar surrounding. And for me to, you know, jump to the conclusion he's seen something that I can't see is irresponsible. It's, you know, it'd be like walking around with a millimeter with no batteries in it. So to really understand what his reaction was indicative of was the key. So a lot of reaching out to behavioralists, a lot of reading. There's a book called Inside of a Dog by Alexander Horowitz, and I recommend it to anyone as kind of a starter. It's just, it kind of goes through and outlines the things that canines, it scratches the surface of what they're capable of and how they see the world. And it just, I mean, I've lived with and worked with dogs my whole life, and I was a little ashamed of myself and how little I actually knew and understood. So that's where I really delve into anything I could possibly get my hands on, and it opened all kinds of doors. And, you know, like I said, it's irresponsible to go out, in my mind, and not understand that, and just, you know, react and say everything that he does is because there's, you know, a ghost hanging out with us. That's not right. But if something that he reacts to is based off of something that is a reaction that could be startled or whatever it is, because he's working, he's looking for, you know, that scent. And if he reacts adversely, then I can pick up something else, and it's layered, and then I can say there's the potential for, you know, that maybe we've captured something, who knows. Get an EVP or catch, I mean, a couple times he's reacted, and we've got a shadow figure moving away that we're able to explain is, you know, there was no possible source. It was an IR reflection or a shadow or caused by anything else. So those types of things are really what it's all about. So pretty cool stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. Is there, all right, this is a question I've had, and every single time I watch a show, and I've never actually, like, send you a message or ask you about this, how hard was it to train for that versus training for drug sniffing or, you know, like, the normal working dog? How hard
It's identical. It's virtually identical. I was using an EM pump to generate, and I also would use things like I'd put like a I don't really like to use the ghost box anymore, but I would put one in the room to flood the room with white noise as a distraction, have people come through. And I rented a dog training facility that I work at. Do a lot of different things with, and, you know, they let me take, you know, the room for an hour for $10, and they've got all kinds of things in there. But it's the same exact thing. You know, with scent work, if you're training a drug sniffing dog, you're going to take a, you know, small bag of a weed and hide it somewhere. If you're doing bomb training, you're going to take, you know, whatever glycerin or whatever the, you know, you're working for at that point and train with that scent. So it's the same thing. However, the luxury with what I was doing, there's one scent. With cadaver dogs, search and rescue dogs, in that type of training, the bomb sniffing dogs, there's so many different types of explosives. They have to be able to identify each individual one. So you're training them on each scent. The ozone, electromagnetic radiation, the emissions put off is one scent. So I actually, to be honest with you, it's easier because you're only training to identify one thing.
Well, scent versus environment would be like EMF. I mean, were you noticing in the training that EMF was actually putting off a scent, or was it just a feeling that was picked up on?
My research showed that they could actually smell. You know, for example, you might have been to a haunted house or been around like a Jacob's Ladder or some kind of Tesla coil where it's so strong that you can actually smell the ozone, where you can smell the electricity.
Yeah.
Dogs can smell on average, you know, depending on the dog. You know, you've got your short-snouted dogs like your pugs, and then you've got your scent hounds like bloodhounds. But on average, for example, Captain being a lab, probably smells somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 to 3 million times more than you and I. I mean, just think if you could double what you could smell and now take that by 2 to 3 million times. So it's abundantly clear that dogs can smell that, and so that was my premise on the whole thing. To say to maybe sense it, you know, absolutely. I think that a lot of what people say, the sixth sense, you hear people saying that livestock and dogs and other animals can sense natural disasters. I've got a working theory on that is actually the electromagnetic fields that are put off with seismic tectonic shifts, which, you know, for example, a tsunami is going to be caused by an earthquake. That smell is going to be pretty pungent, and animals are a lot more able to identify those types of things because of Darwinism, you know, evolution. They're able to recognize that there's a problem coming. Dogs in Japan before the tsunami were going inland. The feral dogs, you know, so they're able to identify these things and react just basically out of instinct. So I think that those are the types of things that, you know, they actually have something with their olfactory systems. It's almost like a mini brain. Their ability to scent or with scent is probably the equivalent of all of our senses combined and some, because it's not directional. So those are the types of things that, you know, really are interesting. Like, for example, if your dog goes outside, if someone's hiding around the side of the house, they can smell it. It's not line of sight like our vision is. You can't see around the corner. They can smell around the corner. They can, you know, if you go and you make some salsa and the dog walks into the room, they're going to smell the individual stuff. They're going to smell the cilantro, the tomatoes, their individual scents to them because of their olfactory systems. So it's really, really remarkable. And so, but like I said, that wasn't my end game. You know, it's just like if he smells a field and identifies it, it's just like if you're in a location and you get a hit on your millimeter, your K2, your EMF sensor, it doesn't mean that you're in the presence of something, but it means to, you know, clamp down, focus, and see if you can come up with a corresponding piece of evidence. And mm-hmm. So that's really what it's all about. So if people, you know, sometimes kind of jump the gun and say, you know, just because your dog smells something doesn't mean there's anything there. And I absolutely agree. I'm actually harder on it because I feel that it's my responsibility as the first person presenting a trained canine in the field to not make those assumptions. So I'm a lot harder on anything that comes from something that he's generated than I would be generally speaking, because I know it's under the microscope, and I have no problem with that.
Cool. Well, we're a little bit over time, but man, yeah, I'm definitely going to look forward to talking to you some more about all this, because I have a German Shepherd myself, and I've always thought about training her and bringing her on investigations with us.
You know, I'd be happy to work with you on it and kind of outline, you know, something very similar to what we did. And German Shepherds being working dogs, you know, the Malinois, everything in that working dog field would be a phenomenal candidate. So I'd love to have some more dogs out there in the field, you know, doing it right.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, putting the legitimate face on this. So, yeah, we'll definitely look into this a little bit further.
Cool.
I'm stoked.
Well, we're to the end of the show, and Matt, I'm indebted to you, man. Thanks for coming on and helping me out tonight.
Yeah, no problem. And anytime you need, just shoot me a message, and I'm here.
Cool. Yeah.
So, tell me, are you good for Tuesday with Jody and him?
Yeah, just shoot me a reminder because I'm the silver fox and forget things about as soon as I remember them, but that should be no problem.
Yeah, if you want to. I'm using our paranormal Facebook page, which is Spirit Casper. You can zap me a message, and I'll give you all the info on the show for Tuesday.
Sounds good. I'll do it as soon as we're off the phone.
All right, man. Well, thank you guys for coming on, and look forward to talking to both of you again.
Sounds good. Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
All right.
No problem. Thanks, Helmy. I know it was the last couple of minutes, but you actually got the plugs in before it ended. So.
Yeah, and one last
I'll
thing.
I'll take it.
Yeah, exactly.
I was watching the ticker. I'm like, all right. Yes, he's got him. So, all right, guys. Have a good night, and we'll talk soon.
Hey, Matt, who do you have on Wednesday?
As of right now, I'm still working on that. So.
Okay. But everybody out there, tune in on Wednesdays for Full Spectrum Radio with Matt and Dennis, 8 p.m. Central Time. So, yeah, I had to throw that out there and plug your show, man.
Yeah. Also, I will be on tomorrow, as I am every Monday now. So I have to work tomorrow, too, on this, on Into the Darkness with Brittany. So I haven't talked to her. She didn't return a text message, so I don't know who's on. So
well,
I shall be
– You and I are alternating nights because you're going on tomorrow and then I go back on Tuesday.
Yeah, it seems to be that way, huh?
Yeah.
I'm on tomorrow, you're on Tuesday, and then Wednesday I'm back on. It's
all right,
fun,
guys.
It's fun. So.
Yeah, I know.
Well, everybody have a good night, and we're going to end this show.
All right.
Sounds good.
Thanks
again, guys.
Thanks again, everybody. Appreciate it.
All right.
My pleasure.
Good night.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
You're listening to the Unknown Radio Network at www.blogtalkradio.com.